The Astros signed Justin Verlander over the weekend to a two-year extension worth $66 million. It keeps him here through the 2021 season. He is the highest paid pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball. I like the move, and I'm excited to watch Verlander pitch for the next couple years because he's awesome to watch. Here is my one fear. I'm worried this means that Gerrit Cole is gone because they clearly prioritize re-signing Verlander over Cole. Cole is going to cost them more, way more overall money. Verlander signed for 66. Cole is going to be a 5 or 6 year deal for probably, I'm just going to throw out some numbers, 150, yeah. 160. And I'm worried that the Verlander deal means that Cole might be pitching his last season.
You know what though, Mike? I understand that worry and that concern. And it makes sense because Gerrit Cole obviously is very, 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 very good and very good players. Still are managing to get good contracts in free agency. I'm not as pessimistic, though, as I was like 2 years ago that, hey, once your best player hits free agency, that's it, sayonara. Because free agency has changed so much. And I think there's a chance that they retain Gerrit Cole. But if they don't, I mean, you've still got, look, you've got Forrest Whitley. You've got Josh James. You've got J.B. Bukowski. It's like you have all these guys, at least one or two of whom is going to end up being good. And then you have the potential to pick up another Gerrit Cole out there on the market somewhere, or more likely a Charlie Morton. Or a Colin McHugh or various other players that they've taken and improved them when they've gotten to Houston, just like it happened with Gerrit Cole, that it doesn't concern me as much. Like Gerrit Cole is a different pitcher now than he was his last couple years in Pittsburgh. And the same thing can happen with somebody else.
You mentioned Whitley and Bukauskas. I'm optimistic, but I need to see it from those two, Seth. But also, when it comes to Gerrit Cole, just because he hasn't gotten a contract extension now doesn't mean he won't get it in a couple of months. And honestly, I think that Gerrit Cole needs to pitch a little bit longer the way that he pitched last season to prove that he's going to be able to do it again and to get that kind of contract extension. Because I wonder if the American League will figure him out a little bit more so than they did last season. He came over from the National League. He was dominant to open up the season. As the season progressed, he continued to pitch pretty well. But is that going to be the same that it was? I don't know. So I would like to see a little bit more before I actually give him that contract. Where with Verlander, I entirely trust that I am going to get the exact production that we've seen out of him with the Houston Astros going forward. And yes, even at 37, 38 years old.
Well, and I guess I would ask this question. If you think about in football where, you know, it's kind of like your quarterback is a pitcher who also has to worry about getting hit by 320-pound men, and that your ability to endure is a lot tougher in some respects in football just because you're getting hit and you have to worry about that. Now when a player is productive, if a quarterback is productive at the age of 35 or 36 now these days, don't you pretty much just pencil him in for another 3, 4, 5 years of productivity? It's just that's the way things are going in athletics now. It's that that ability to endure and age well is just so much different now because guys are so much smarter about their sleep, about their nutrition, about all these things. And especially with Verlander, because you've seen it here in Houston, their ability to take advantage of so many of these electronic coaching tools now. You know, and to do all of the analysis and the high-speed video system and all that other stuff that helps guys just keep tweaking things and getting better. I like, there's no part of me that's pessimistic about Verlander's ability to be good for 3 more years.
Here's where I get a little bit nervous here. As we're discussing the Justin Verlander extension and the ramifications, I like the move. I am worried that it'll mean that they lose Gerrit Cole moving forward. I have two examples of pitchers. Now, this is not like in the last 2 years, but this is in the last like 10 years. And these are two guys who were amazing up until they weren't, and then they were out of baseball. So Cliff Lee with the Phillies at age 34 threw 222 innings with an ERA of 2.87 at age 34. 2 years later, he was out of baseball. He had retired, number one. Number two, Roy Halladay, rest in peace. When he was 35 years old, Roy Halladay, when he was 34, through 233 innings, and he had an ERA of 2.35. His last season was 2 years later when he was 36. And those were guys, though. I mean, Halliday's a Hall of Famer. Cliff Lee's probably a cut below that. But those guys were dominance when they were in their mid-30s. And they were like, and people were like, oh my God, they were part of one of the best pitching staffs ever. And then all of a sudden, like, the drop-off was so sudden. I love Verlander. Love Verlander. But I worry about the aging.
I guess, okay. Now, with those guys, though, how much of it was injury versus like drop in velocity? Because a lot of
Verlander's, Halliday's velocity dropped a lot at the end. Like it fell off.
It did.
Clip.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And that's where I guess with Verlander, his velocity has improved from over a couple of 2 or 3 years ago. Now,
exactly.
A lot of that's just technique based and health based because he had injury issues. So it really comes down to, is he going to stay healthy? And like all great athletes, when they hit their mid-30s, a lot of them, like Kobe, could still produce. He just couldn't stay healthy.
Yep.
Is he going to get to that point? And that's where, like, I'll lean on the Astros and all of this biometric data they have. I'm guessing they've got some projections that show, like a pretty good chance that he stays healthy. Just because the way his body moves and because of his health over the last couple of years, I think he's going to be just fine. Is there a chance of injury? Yeah, but there's a chance of injury with, Lance McCullers. And he's a much younger man.
Of course. And there's obviously a chance of injury for, Altuve in a prime year this past year. I think what it is, it's more acute with a pitcher because you're paying a guy so much money, and even though they are valuable, they are only out there every fifth day, right? Yeah. Whereas these position players, they're helping you every single night.
And this is the other part, too, and this goes with Mike Trout, that I feel like even baseball writers just want to ignore intentionally or something, is just the simple draw. Like, how much money are you actually making off of Verlander? Verlander pulls people to the ballpark.
Mike
Trout pulls people to the ballpark. There's parents there are parents out there in California that are like, I got to get my kids to see Mike Trout before they're too old. I want this to be a memory they have. And it's as simple as that sometimes. Gerrit Cole, I'm guessing, doesn't pull as many people to the ballpark as Justin Verlander does.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Monday. The Astros re-signed Justin Verlander. He is here through 2021 on a 2-year deal worth $66 million. Meanwhile, a 1-year deal for a lot less money. The Texans signed left tackle, formerly of the Panthers and Vikings, Matt Khalil. My question for you guys, does this Khalil signing change anything in terms of fixing the offensive line this offseason?
It depends on what you mean by fix. Could it potentially make it better? It could in that, like, Matt Khalil's last year that he played healthy was 2017, and he was better in that year than Julian Davenport. He wasn't good, but he was better than Julian Davenport. Like, you can make the argument that he was he was on the lesser half of offensive tackles, maybe the bottom 25% of offensive tackles in 2017. But that's still better than what Julian Davenport was last year. So it creates competition for Julian Davenport. Whatever upside Julian Davenport has, he better start delivering on it this year. If it does end up being Matt Khalil at left tackle, and he's healthy, yeah, there's a chance that they're better. But I'd be really, I'm not excited about this signing. I'm still really, really, really worried about the Texans' offensive line. I'm still really worried about Deshaun Watson's ability to stay healthy because neither of those guys right there, you shouldn't expect either of those guys that are at left tackle right now to be the fix. And it'll be a nice, pleasant surprise, though, if they are.
Yeah, it creates competition at left tackle, but cool, there should have been competition at left tackle regardless. Julian Davenport could have been competing against no one, and honestly, he still should have been in trouble in that spot. He could have been competing against a fifth-round rookie, and it still should have been dangerous for him. Cool, you got another veteran option. Like that's the only positive spin I can take out of it. I have never heard a good thing said about Matt Khalil. I have not. I'll be honest. I didn't hear a whole lot about him when he first came out. I know he was a top five pick, but over the last couple of years, I've heard nothing positive about him. Wade Smith has a great write up about him at SportsRadio610.com, and he said low risk, high reward kind of a player, but he has questions about the guy's actual intensity and whether or not he has a chip on his shoulder every single play. I want a violent offensive lineman if he's going to be extremely talented.
Well, the scary thing for me is I'm not even worried about the chip on his shoulder because I'm just, for a guy like Khalil, I'm worried about, one, can he stay healthy, and two, is he any good? Like, the chip on the shoulder part, I'd be worried about that if I was drafting, a first-round pick, a tackle, and we're putting together a composite of, does this guy have enough, edge to him or whatever?
Right.
With Matt Khalil, I'm basically like, hey, can you stay healthy? Can you beat out Davenport, and can you not make me terrified on every single play?
Bruno Giacomini had a chip on his shoulder. It did not help him. Jonathan Ogden, no chip on that shoulder. He was like a swell dude, but there's nothing you could do to beat him. It was the most frustrating thing in the world. He had these long, he was like that villain in one of those Spider-Man movies, that big spider dude that had the long legs and everything. He was like that guy. He was like this super freak villain from a superhero movie that you just couldn't touch because his arms and legs were so long. But no chip on the shoulder. He'd never do a mean thing to you. Not a hostile bone in his body. Didn't matter.
I'm not dismissing Paul's point. It's more like that's like a luxury problem, and I feel like we're homeless. Yeah. That's how I feel. I feel like we're homeless, and I need Mac Khalil to be like my house right now, or my apartment, or something like that. That's what I need.
He'll be your...
It's a nice tent.
He can be your Section 8 housing. He can be got him at a discount.
I think he's a tent.
It's not the perfect one, but your Section 8 housing, look, it's not bad if you find a good landlord. You just don't want to have a slumlord in charge of your Section 8 housing. And that's what Matt Khalil can be. He can be an improvement, and if he does have a chip on his shoulder, as Wade pointed out in his article, I think he can be better than he showed in 2017 and his last year in Minnesota. But he also, the other big thing to worry about with him is that he's been injured two of the last three seasons. Like, he's in two of the last three seasons, he missed a total of 30 games. You know, 2017 was his only healthy season. So that's where you got to figure, okay, how healthy is he? Are you actually going to see the good version of him like you saw early on in Minnesota? Then that would make me feel pleased. Maybe he goes out there, and in training camp, this is what you have to hope. In training camp, you watch him move around and you think, holy crap, this is a different guy than we've seen the last few years out of Matt Khalil. This looks more like the guy did at USC. I like this guy.
He is a tent in East Downtown with a Mensa scholar inside of said tent. But are you ever going to get that guy again, or is this person so far off the deep end from all the things that they put into their body that they are no longer redeemable? That's what I think Matt Khalil is.
I like this analogy.